Welcome to episode 74 of The Bull Run, the official podcast for snooker professional Stuart Bingham. This content is sponsored by renovation specialists R&J Carpentry and Construction, and it's a show in which I, sports journalist James Colasanti, ask the man nicknamed Bull Run about recent results, life on tour, and life in general. Good morning, mate. How are you today?
All good, thanks. A little bit tired still.
Yeah, but I bet. We'll come on to that in a minute. But I mean, I'll start the show by saying, you know, our regular listeners will know we were, both of us, a little bit downcast on last month's show as we discussed an early defeat in Wales as you drove home from the tournament. So I'm very happy to say it'll be a whole lot more positive this month after a brilliant run to the final of the World Grand Prix in Hong Kong. It was your first ranking final for 6 years, and every media man and his dog loves to mention you are now one of the older players on the circuit, of course, to achieve this. So you tweet, you only landed back in the UK yesterday. So how are you feeling this morning? By my reckoning, your body clock reckons it's about 6 p.m. in the evening. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's about right, yeah. Still a bit tired. Woke up about 3 o'clock this morning.
Right.
So on and off sleep till about sort of 7, 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Until Michelle asked me to do the school run.
Is that right? You're still going to get away with it, eh? You're still getting in there.
I think I got back to my home at about 10 to 8 yesterday. And, right. And straight away, she went, come on, let's go take the kids to school.
Blimey. That is merciless, isn't it? That's your missus. I include mine all over. It's just they don't care. It's relentless. The kids are there. It needs doing. But hey-ho, good work, mate. What we'll do is we'll go through your five matches in Hong Kong one by one, as they all kind of had stories to tell. And we started. It all got underway on the first day. It's a 4-2 win over fellow former world champ and generational peer Mark Williams. It went 2-2. Time from you in the second frame after a bit of an early fluke. And then you kind of scrap your way over the line with a nice double on the green at the end, I saw. The commentary team, I think it was Dominic Dale, described it as, from you, patches of excellence decorated with errors. But ultimately, it was a hugely important and confidence-boosting win in the end. So how good did that feel?
That may probably summed up the way it's been going for the last maybe couple of years. Some good stuff, but then some like very amateurish stuff. Obviously coming off of a 5-0 win, a 5-0 loss, 4-0 loss, and then losing the first frame when we both had loads of chances. I'm like, here we go again. And then obviously I doubled the long red, playing a safety shot, and then made 100 off it. So that got me into the swing of things, and I felt good. Obviously, I went to Thailand beforehand. I just needed a break, and it just worked out perfect. I was in Thailand for about 10 days.
Cleared your head a bit, sort of thing, did it?
I had 4 or 5 rounds of golf with my friends over there. And I had a few pool exhibitions, snooker exhibitions. I was there, 10 days? I think if I practiced 5 hours of snooker in that time,
that
was about it. So obviously, it's done me good, so... I've got a free pass to Thailand every tournament I play in now from Michelle.
Look at that. What an operator you are. You are a lesson to all of us men out there.
But
That's interesting what you say about that. Just kind of almost, like you say, putting snooker to one side, sort of taking the pressure off, just almost sort of detaching from it, you know. And you found that kind of helped as a method to kind of clear your head and reset sort of thing, yeah?
Yeah, it seemed to work. Like I say, I drove back when we last spoke. I actually didn't pick my cue up till the following week.
Right.
So I think I played an hour day before I went to Thailand, and then sort of like, say, 5 or 6 hours while I was in Thailand. And obviously it seemed to do the trick. Like I say, you obviously reset. Obviously as the tournament went on, bit of pressure obviously was mounting. Obviously needed to get to the final for the players next week and stuff like that, and obviously it sort of showed him a game a bit, but so obviously just getting a little bit stronger and stronger, sort of as you say, going through the matches, how I felt in between and whatsoever, and just felt good, like you say, resetted the method, and it seemed to work.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Next up was a 4-2 win over Wu Yi's, a player you described as arguably China's best player to emerge since Ding Junhui 2 decades ago. High praise indeed. Around 1,000 fans enjoyed ridiculously high quality encounter between you and the 21-year-old home favourite at the K-Tac Arena. It featured 3 tons, 3 high 50-plus breaks. I'd look back, we beat you at the English Open in September, so it was a little bit of payback. And more than that, this must have just felt like a real return to something like your best stuff, right?
Yeah, that definitely for me was a confidence booster. Being 2-0 down, he's made 200s off the bat, really, and back against the wall. And then I think I made a 70-odd break to get 2-1.
What did you think when you sat back? That it was 120. I think it was a 129 when he started with, and you sat down coming out for the third and that. Did you still feel, you know, you really did sort of like just, that's what I mean, it was a different type of win, wasn't it? What did you feel like when you sat down and you come out and just thought, I can still do this, or, you know, what was going through your mind?
No, it's obviously, I didn't really do a lot wrong. I played a safety shot. He only could see one ball. He's cross doubled it. The red arrow, it went through all the reds to go in. Got a nice kiss on the brown and then made up the obviously 129 or whatever it was off of it. I'm like, right, that's the way it goes. Yeah. And then he made another 100 and I'm like, well, that's the player he is. He's so good. So, like you say, I didn't really do a lot wrong. I just sort of try to keep believing that my game's good, in a good place. And eventually sort of got it back to 2-2. I think I made 100, I think, to go 3-2 or whatever. And then obviously got over the line in the end. But, that was a good win, good confidence builder as well. Because, like you say, the player he is, he's got so much potential. His manager Django, obviously from Romford, from the Grove at Romford. He only picks sort of good players in his in his camp. So obviously he's seen something other players have.
Isn't it? You know that place and what he's produced over the years. Yeah, just on the arena, the 1,000 fans, the China thing, and good fun. You know, crackling atmosphere, just like good to play in sort of thing.
Yeah, obviously it was a massive arena. Yeah. A few people sort of said it looked a bit sparse with the crowds and that.
Yeah.
Obviously, table one was busier than table two. I think two or three matches on table two. So there's still a few hundred people watching, but how big it was, it just looked empty. So,
it's difficult to know arena. How they did it, though. I mean, as a player, did the acoustics feel right? Did the crowd feel close? You know what I mean? It's just, what did it sort of feel like on the table sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, no, I felt good. I think it literally opened up 2 or 3 days before the tournament.
Right, I see.
So, it was like, obviously, when it got to the end, the end of the final, obviously the crowd wanted me to get a frame on the board and things like that. And it was like unbelievable. Obviously walking in with Judd, he obviously, I think, got the biggest crowd, got the biggest cheer.
He's home favourite nowadays, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So it was good to be involved in that and hear it all. And it's unbelievable sort of atmosphere there.
One.
Next up was Mark Selby, again a player Dominic Dale described as about as hard to beat in snooker as Djokovic is in tennis. Of course, he's talking prime Djokovic, of course, not the tennis legend who's currently struggling a bit. But anyway, it's a fair point. Everyone knows Jester from Leicester is as stingy as they come. In this one, you won 3 frames in a row to come back from 4-2 down for victory. And obviously against a guy who prides himself on not giving anything away. Again, a very different type of match, a different type of opponent, a different type of win. But how pleasing was this one?
Yeah, good. I was 2-1 up. I was on for 147. I ended up missing a black on 65. So I should have gone 3-1 up. But he pulled out a great clearance to go 2-2. And then, obviously, I the old yips was coming back, the old jabs in the cue action, and it obviously cost me a few frames. But the funny side of it was, obviously after I've won 5-4, I've got in the car, I've rung Michelle, and I had a couple of friends in the car, and she's, "Oh, do you want to ring me back when we get back to the hotel?" And she was a bit down. I'm like, "Oh right, what's the matter?" So when I've got back to the room, rung her, and she went, "Oh, come in, what's happened?" I went, "What do you mean, what's happened? I won." She went, "What? You lost 4-2. Right. I went, "No, I was 4-2 down, I won 5-4. She went, "But the other two matches were first to four."
Right, she got the wrong round or something, did she? Or she was just, yeah.
She didn't realise. Right, she didn't realise. Okay, yeah. So she turned the match off at 4-2.
Oh, I see, right. Okay.
So she didn't even see me win.
I feel for her. I mean, obviously, I do this sort of thing for work, but all of, yeah, that's what I mean. It can be difficult to keep track, but I'm glad you dug Shao out on the show there, you know, and showed her up. But nice surprise for her in the end. Was she pleased? You know, when you
keep, yeah, without a doubt, yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, like you say, to come back from 4-2 down to beat Mark, that was, like you say, I said afterwards, I think we finished quite late, and I said, like, it's hard to take anything because I was jabbing and twitching all over the place. So I did, obviously, woke up the next day. I did obviously take positives because I was still in the tournament and obviously in the semi-final, so... But it was just hard. It was just a hard game for me.
I was going to say, it's really interesting. Of all the guys you want to be playing, like you say, if you know, 100% Selby's the last, isn't it? Especially, like, you know, from that. It's gutsy stuff. I mean, that's what match play's about, isn't it? Like you say, you just wake up the next morning, you're still in the tournament. That's all that mattered, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, obviously looking at that, then obviously that semi-final match was my final. Because I know if I got to the final, that was me in, obviously, next week's tournament.
Yeah.
So, and obviously playing the best player of the season and maybe the last, maybe 5-6 years. It was always going to be an uphill battle. We played in the Championship League in January.
Yeah.
And he sort of turned me over 3-1. Weren't a canter, really. So I knew I was going to find it tough. But obviously, luckily for me, that obviously the match before, he played Hussein Fafai in the quarterfinals, and he made 4 tons at and won 5-0. So I know, obviously, in sport, like a golfer, when they shoot 61, the following day is always tough.
Yeah.
So I just kept sort of thinking that and like hoping that would be the case.
Bit of a come down. Interesting psychology. Yeah, yeah.
Kind yeah,
of just almost sort going of... too early with your kind of like your both barrels sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and like obviously being the home favourite. Living there, he's got a few little extra pressures. Obviously, the first tournament there as a ranking event for like three decades, or they said.
Yeah.
So yeah, I knew he'd find it a little bit harder to settle, and lucky for me, I settled early on and got me nose in front.
Yeah, I got to ask about the irked missed red 4-1 up. We spoke about pesky photographers in the past. Was it just someone in your eye line in the crowd? What was going on there?
I know the cameraman. Obviously, when you're not sleeping and you're not on 100%, you see things, and just about as I was obviously pulling the trigger, he'd raise his hand up to obviously adjust the camera.
Right.
And the, like you say, the cameraman. So he, like, obviously the crowd were further back, so any movement there, you don't really see nothing.
Right.
You could hear the photographers clicking away when you're down on shots, but obviously the cameraman's right there, and he just kept moving his hand up and down.
Right.
And he done it right at the time as I was just about to play the shot. And like, as I do, I'll always get them straight away, and people think I moan about it, that I'm always moaning about camera people and
it's
photographers
like,
and all that.
It's high stakes stuff, isn't it? And what's on the line and getting to the final, you know what I mean? It's career. It's just, you know, I can understand it. I think you keep it together remarkably well. I know some of the players sort of lose it a lot more, and a lot of people are very placid, just different personalities. But with what's riding on it, I can completely understand, you know, you just, if something, you know, could potentially cost you that kind of thing. But, I mean, obviously, you know, luckily in this one, I mean, you controlled it, just great performance, and you know, I mean, look, you're clearly emotional and happy after the win. And you said, there's a quote here, you said, I had a little tear there at the table because it's been a long time. It's been hard. Without a doubt, I've wondered if I'd ever get back into a ranking final. The last few years haven't been good on my part. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, did it kind of remind you you've still got plenty to give the sport of snooker? And I guess that you can still be a force at the real sharp end of these huge tournaments.
Yeah, without a doubt. Like you say, it's been a long time. It's obviously, I think the last final was the Masters, so before COVID. Mm. Yeah, like you always think, is it ever going to happen? Obviously, the way the game's been the last sort of 2 or 3 years, and the way I started being jabbing here and there, the last maybe probably sort of 3 or 4 months. You do sort of think I'm just making the numbers up. Mm. I sort of sometimes it's a result getting it just into the Grand Prix, so you got like another payday.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden 4 or 5 days later I'm in the final out of nowhere, really.
Mm.
It's nice to I've still got that belief that I can do something, otherwise I'd have maybe probably retired say 5 years ago or whatever, but
yeah.
I still keep believing that my game's there. When I still feel like when it's my day, I can beat anyone. And I've flashes, obviously beat Ronnie in the Worlds in April. Mm. Obviously losing it to Jack Jones in the semis. Mm. But it's little flashes like that keeps me knowing that I can do something. I can still compete with the best. And
yeah.
Like you say, obviously Judd didn't have a good day, but lucky for me, obviously I won and obviously got to the final, and that's all that matters, really.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm going to say this, but I always feel it's there with you. I can see the fire's still in there. There's still the kin, and you see the results from time to time. And I can understand completely from your own internal point of view why you think, no, I can still do this. You know, it's whether or not there's patches where it's not so good or whatever, it's still in there, and it only needs to click, you know, for a week at a time, and that's
yeah.
You're stood there with a trophy, ain't you? So, look, I mean, we'll come on to the final.
Can we not?
Yeah, I was gonna say we can't put a cherry on it. It's kind of like, oh my god, what's the final chapter? He dies in the end or something, isn't it? Maybe you said a minute ago about Judd, you know, coming off a bit of a come down all the rest, you know, maybe that got you a bit. As sure as everybody knows, it's a 10-0 whitewash defeat to Neil Robertson in the final. You just said it here and you said it yourself. The Judd match was very much mission accomplished. But have you had a little bit more time to reflect on the Robbo defeat and what's your kind of take on it now?
It's weird, really. It's like it was just a bad day, mm. obviously. I had chances to, like you say, to take it maybe probably like 5-all if I took all my chances. And then obviously it's a totally different ball game. But just Neil punished me every sort of mistake I'd done when I didn't finish the frames off. Mm. Normally that don't happen. They normally like miss here and there. But Neil was ruthless, obviously, that day. So it's just like you say, and then it snowballs, just sort of 5-0 down. He goes for a red that if it's like 3-2, it's 10 times harder, but he obviously gets it and pots it and clears up.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of the way it sort of went. Simple as that, really. It was his day. Mm. Obviously, he played unbelievable. Sort of 8-0, I looked at the stats, mm. and I think other than one frame, he didn't make a break over 50 sort of thing.
Yeah.
So,
It's the nature of the beast. Snooker, you've whitewashed players, maybe not in finals or whatever, but it happens, you know, player playing well, getting the rub, you know, it's just, that's how it goes, isn't it? If somebody's got the control on the table and doing the job, then it happens.
Yeah.
But, look, I mean, I see everybody saying you've got this immediate chance of revenge, as they put it. It's on Tuesday, you play Robertson in the Players' Championship in the 1 p.m. session. How keen are you to give a better account of yourself against the Thunder this time around?
If people that know me that I will be fighting every inch for just to get a frame on the board,
yeah.
and raise my hands up and go get in. But I sort of hate losing to people like 2 times on the trot. So I'll be up for that. He's obviously got different expectations. He's going to fancy winning that tournament the way he's been playing. So
yeah.
It's going to be a obviously a tough game. Like you say, I'm obviously going to practice a little bit today, and might try and even get a game with Kyron on Sunday or whatever on the way up there.
Yeah.
I'm in the tournament, so I'm looking forward to it. Telford, we used to play the UK there, and I played a bit of nine ball there last year.
Right.
So it'd be nice to get there and just sort of try and enjoy the game. And I think I sort of had a quick look at the rankings. For me to get in the Tour Championship, which is the next one, I need another final.
Is that right? All the way to the final, we'll do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
So obviously, if I'd have won that final, that would have put me in everything top 16, Tour Championships and stuff like that. So
yeah.
But not winning that, I've got to now get to the final again to get in the Tour Championship and the top 16. So. Right. For the world, so I've got a goal for next week, and just taking it sort of one tournament at a time, one match at a time, as the old saying goes. But looking forward to it.
Please check the volume of our earpieces. One of them are very loud. Thank you.
Okay, we'll step away from the table for a minute, and we'll do the Carla's ever so clever question section. I've already primed Stu for what's coming down the line here. Watching the Mark Williams match, and Carla looked up and she noticed that your wedding ring was kind of slipping down the finger there. And the reason she pointed that out is because mine does the same, because, I'm not the entire man that I was when we got married either. It's an indication that you've lost some weight, as has happened with me. So she asked, what sort of fitness or weight losing regime have you been on lately, and how are you getting such good results?
For the first couple of months I was saying, I've just cut out food and this and that, and as I'm 48 coming up 49, the legs, the knees ain't what they used to be, the back ain't what it used to be. So a few of my close friends have sort of said to me about getting on this Monjaro weight loss pen.
Okay, I haven't heard of that. It's is it like an app or how does it work? What is it?
No, it's an injection. Sorry, weight loss injection.
Oh, okay. Oh, it's that. Right, okay. I've seen that in the news, obviously. Right, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. So, okay, and it's good stuff. Is it really, really kind of working, really doing the trick? Obviously.
Yeah, I've lost about 3 stone, about 15 kilos, something like that.
Blimey.
And it's
you're
no sweat.
Get a new wardrobe, and it's one a day.
I've already started.
Yeah, I saw the shirts. I saw somebody, sent them through. But it gets expensive, doesn't it? You're going to have to turn it all around, all your jeans falling off and all that kind of business.
Yeah, my brother, he was a little bit bigger than me, but he's obviously gone into the sort of training. He does all the weightlifting and cardio and all that, but he's lost some weight, all my stuff are too big for him now.
Right.
But he was getting all my hand-me-downs, but I've obviously played golf in Thailand. I went from 38 to 34s,
right,
in the waist in my shorts and that. So I've and sort of just one injection a week,
right,
and obviously different levels as you go through the months, really. I've been on it sort of 5 months, I think,
right,
and I've lost obviously 3 stone. And what it does, it curbs your appetite.
I was
going to
say,
is it
an appetite suppressant? Is that essentially what's going on? Is it? It's just
I'm actually forgetting to eat. Where before I'd get everything around my snooker, I'd eat at like sort of 3 o'clock if I'm playing at seven, so I weren't bloated.
Yeah.
I'm like forgetting I've got to eat something.
Yeah.
Because my belly's like rumbling like anything when I'm playing matches.
Right, slip of a lad. Yeah. Have you noticed, do you feel it's helping the game, improving the table, the movement, that kind of thing? Do you think there's been fringe benefits in terms of that?
I think so. Aiming different, a little bit differently. Hmm. Obviously, I ain't got a bigger breasts as I used to have, obviously the cue's in a different spot, and it's maybe probably why I've sort of got the sort of bit of the jabs and things like that, sort of a bit of the yips, because it obviously ain't looking right and ain't, or it is looking a bit different, but they've been going in. Obviously just gotta try and get through it, and like I say, down to about 15 stone now, and I think I was about 16 when last time I was 15 stone.
Is that right? You're at fighting weight, like, are you? That's not bad at all. Michelle, happy? Is she with her new svelte husband?
Yeah. And she's actually just started it. She's obviously seen the results, and she wants to lose a couple of stone. So she's sort of got her on it, and I think she's lost a stone in the first month of doing it. Blimey. So I started to tell everyone. Yeah. Obviously, I was on it when I was in Hong Kong and that, because everyone was saying, like, have you done it?
Yeah, exactly. Come on, out with it. What's going on? Yeah, no, that's oh, good stuff. I will report back to the missus. She'll be interested in all that. But all right, listen, finally, I just want to give you the chance to send some condolences out to various families and loved ones. You mentioned just as we started the show, and I obviously wasn't aware of this, is a friend of yours, is Lee Fairbrother. His mum's passed away in recent weeks. And as everybody who's seen the coverage in Hong Kong will know, because you mentioned it, long-serving coach Joe Lazarus. And it's actually, I know it was quoted as Uncle Ray, but to clarify, it's actually Michelle's uncle Des has also passed away. Now, I think I vaguely remember writing about Joe in the Echo a bit. I think he was quite well known in kind of local circles. But with everyone there, can you just sort of just tell us a bit about those people, how they impacted your career, your life, and I guess send those condolences out.
Yeah, obviously with Joe, I must have been about 16. And I end up going into his club at Basildon Snooker Club, and he sort of took me under his wing, really. We was together for like 10, 11 years. Then we had a little break and then got back together. And he was moved to Baz Gifford home, old people's home, just opposite my house, 2 or 3 days before I was going to Thailand. So I didn't actually get a chance to go and see him. And then obviously heard the bad news when he was in Hong Kong. So, obviously gutted. But
do you know,
like you say,
Joe, roughly how old he was? He was obviously, a gentleman of advanced years, as they say. He was quite a bit old, wasn't he? I know he'd been obviously in the local scene for a long time.
Yeah, he must have been mid-80s. I'm sure he was 70 for about 15 years.
Yeah, right.
It's one of those.
Yeah.
But, he obviously done a lot for obviously the local leagues, and I've had so many messages off like old pros saying, like, sending their best wishes and obviously going back old stories and stuff like that. So it's obviously a nice sort of tribute to Joe, what he was as a man, sort of thing.
Yeah, and obviously on the home front, you mentioned obviously Michelle's uncle as well. We talked about when it rains, it pours, and Lee's mum. It's just, I guess as much as anything else, you know, you're in the middle of the snooker tournament, you're getting big results. It's a lot going on. I'm not really surprised you were emotional at points. I guess it was just a lot to process at the time, yeah?
Yeah, it was. Like I say, I think I was in Thailand when my mate Lee's mum Karen passed away. I couldn't be there for him. And obviously in between the two sessions of the final, Michelle's uncle Des, we was talking about Ray, and obviously with everything going on, I've said Ray, or uncle Ray, sort of thing, or cousin Ray,
right?
But obviously start of the week as well, you had Jack Lazowski's dad passed away. He won his first game. We see him in the morning, and then we see he's playing Judd, and then he withdrew. So no one knew what was happening. So that must have been a hard sort of 14-hour flight home with everything going on. And obviously, like I say, send regards to obviously Jack. But it just shows you, it's like our tough snooker is, it's only a game. Yeah. Obviously, life's more important.
No, absolutely.
Like you say, the older we get, when you're young, you go to weddings and things like that. But the older you get, you sort of, it turns to funerals. Obviously, all the friends and family you have through life.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've got to be there for them.
No, that's right. The circle of life, and you're all humans, you know. Like you say, we're families, but like you said, yeah. On the table, life in the old dog yet. So it's you know, it's been a positive time. It's looked to the future. Okay, mate. Well, listen, it only remains for me to say, of course, thank you very much for your time today, and wish you the best of luck for the Robertson Clash next week.
Thanks a lot. Cheers, James.